Excellent. Are we ready to go, Mike?
Yeah, it's set.
Greetings. I'd like to extend my appreciation to Tulia Memorial University, their faculty, presenters, our techie people, who without this help from them, we would not be able to do this program. And of course, we extend our appreciation to all of you who have taken time from your busy schedule to be with us to help create that thought form that we've been building for quite some time, and the heart and intuition, which really opens the gate to the higher dimensions. So today, we're going to quickly sort of skip over and recapitulate some of the insights that we had in our last meeting so that we have continuity, because we're going to move into several additional areas. So, with that introduction, let us begin. And we're going to start with the second great invocation, because at this time, historically, what is needed is an ability to stand strong against the forces of materialism and evil. And this second great invocation was done just prior to the US entering into the war, and they were attempting to invoke hierarchical forces to assist in closing the doors where evil dwells. So it's a little different than the great invocation, the third one that we've used. And this one is mainly for disciples and advanced esotericists. It's a little more dynamic, a little more will. So keep that in mind, and we need it again because of the dark forces that are trying to usurp in different places on the planet that need to be beaten back and sealed behind that door. So, with that, let us begin with this second great invocation.
Let the lords of liberation issue forth. Let them bring succor to the sons of men. Let the rider from the secret place come forth, and coming save. Come forth, O Mighty One. Let the souls of men awaken to the light, and may they stand with massed intent. Let the fiat of the Lord go forth. The end of woe has come. Come forth, O Mighty One. The hour of service of the saving force is now arrived. Let it be spread abroad, O Mighty One. Let light and love and power and death fulfill the purpose of the coming one, the will to save us here. The love to carry forth the work is widely spread abroad. The active aid of all who know the truth is also here. Come forth, O Mighty One, and blend these three. Construct a great defending wall. The rule of evil now must end.
The will to save is here is actually one of the keynotes of this presentation while we're still under the influence of the Waysack energy and the impact of Shambhala. And it is our combined will aligned with other groups that actually bring in that destroying energy that eliminates those undesirable forms that may have been useful in previous cycles but are no longer needed at this time. The ultimate goal and experience of the divine will is the destruction and negation of all form life when the usefulness of those forms has expired. Because we are in the intermediate phase of this advanced work, it may require many new and creative types of visualization to assist in this profound recognition. In the next quote by DK, we can see the importance of understanding symbols. More and more, as the race progresses, symbols will be used and words less employed. A symbol stands for a thought, an idea, and expresses in one definite form what many words would be needed to define. A symbol makes its appeal through the eye and not the ear, and directly tends to develop the imagination, that power which exists on astral levels and leads directly to the development of the intuition. So, in our last presentation, we shared quite a few animations around the sphere in the dual vortex. And as we recapitulate some of that important information shared at our last meeting, I want to reshare a few of those videos. They're very short, and for all of us to use them as meditations. Keeping in mind that the will of deity comes in from what is called the northern point, although ultimately there is no north, south, east, or west when you're dealing with spherical lives. But just for visualization purposes, imagine in this next animation the will of the Father, the principle of directed purpose, Shambhala pouring down from the highest point in this sphere, that opening vortex, circulating around the inner part of this occult sphere, and then making its exit at the bottom. And two things happen when that dynamic takes place. One, this higher form of life stimulates all the lower organisms or ray lives that are sort of below it in evolutionary development. And yet, paradoxically as this may sound, the descending life actually gains additional stimulation to its own development through this act of service. It sort of dims its light temporarily, only to later increase its vibrancy. Okay, so take a deep breath, relax, and feel yourself as a spherical entity, and that Shambhala is entering from the top and is passing down through all of your centers, all of your ovates and sheaths, your spiritual sheaths. Here we see in miniature the same dynamic, only not on a monadic level, but perhaps more on a soul level. And you have a channel of entry at the top and top of the head where the higher head centers are, and it passes through all the lesser centers, makes its exit at the base of the spine, and then once again curls back around, much as if you took an apple and sliced it right in half. And again, as I've mentioned on many different occasions, when you sound your om prior to your meditation, that if you can sound that om on your particular note of what ray, let's say your personality is, and the right key, it creates a vacuum. And a vacuum, we all know, pulls, because nature abhors a vacuum, and that is the actual dynamic of how the next tier or the next ovid that this disciple is meditating in, it goes on infinitely through multiple levels. And to penetrate and make one direct link, you have to know how to use sound occultly and on the correct key. Again, the importance of your personality and soul note. Okay. We discussed at our last meeting the importance of Shambhala, and in a world of pure energy, of light, and of directed force, Shambhala can be seen as streams and centers of force, all forming a pattern of consummate beauty. This can be a little paradoxical to those students and disciples who have read that the will, the principle of directed purpose, there's no form. It's just either pure energy, or at its even higher form, no energy at all. It's just pure abstraction, the Laya point out of which everything emerges. However, that would be on the very highest aspects of the first ray, and every ray has seven subplanes. So as this will energy in its pure abstract form descends down through the planes, it becomes more solidified, and this is where you get divine geometry. This is
we lost you, Duane. I can't hear
where
you.
you get your triangles in these subplanes. Okay. I'm sorry.
We
Can you hear me
can hear
now,
you.
Bill?
You just, yeah, you just picked back up again.
Okay. Well, I'll recapitulate what I just said. The higher aspects of Shambhala, the first subplane mainly, is pure abstraction. It's prior to form. Some people, like H.P. Blavatsky, called it the eternal darkness. Michael Robinson called it the infinite infinitude. And but when that first ray, which has seven subplanes, descends, it begins to solidify. It's still transparent, translucent, but it begins, this is how it be, all the rays begin to take form, and this is where triangles and their importance come in. And if you look at this as like a giant eye, where the monad pours down from the cosmic astral and mental plane, it creates these sheaths. So here's a case where Shambhala can be seen as a place of pure abstraction, but it can also be seen on its lower subplanes as a series of light and directed force in many streams. Okay, and now here's a side view of it. Well, excuse me, a top view if you had like sliced it with some of the possible note orientation. And I make no claims these are the correct ones. But again, there's all the seven rays. Ray one, red, the center, ray blue, ray three, for all the way out. So now we're going to summarize this introductory part, which is really sort of a recapitulation of our last presentation. We're going to end it with the animation of the vortex showing how the energy either comes in or exits, depending if you want to flip this little animation that I'm sharing with you. It rotates, it palpitates, it throbs to the great heartbeat of some higher being than itself. So again, use this little animation as a short visualization. And if you are inclined, visualize Shambhala descending down through your higher head centers and driving out any unwanted thought forms, and then eventually down through the intuitional plane of love, down through the lower mind, and clearing out all of your auric fields. So, with a deep breath, enter the vortex. You'll notice that the music is a little more forceful and dynamic in that, which sort of represents the shambolic potency And there's several sequences of the same animation. And at the very end, you'll notice you have this ah, and the ah, the A is the one of the mantric words or syllables or words of power for the first ray, just as the ooh is very similar to the om and invokes soul energies, and the M is the mother, it is the crucible, and it is the active intelligent aspect. So there you have the AUM. All can be used together, or it can be used independently depending on your interest. Okay, great. Now that we've recapitulated just very briefly, we can move in to the next section of this presentation. These images presented here may help stimulate the creative imagination of the occult student, who will then pursue this highly arcane process or science under more internal and subjective conditions. If students have some visual image upon which to focus their attention, they can more easily transfer this advanced work up onto the higher subplanes of the mental, where, as we have consistently shared, is where advanced white magic is conducted. You can get a powerful stimulation passively just watching and sort of intuitively participating. You don't have to wind yourself up with a lot of mental thought forms, but when you bring it up to the high mental plane, where there actually are no thought forms, no chitta or mind stuff, that is like a huge magnet that pulls down these higher energies into your auric field. So here's some images that I think can be helpful to understand symbolically the first ray. It's usually depicted as red or orange or gold. And in this particular image, you can see how it has a flange that actually should be inverted so that the first ray impacts the seventh ray, which is violet. And this is out of the secret doctrine, what H.P. Blavatsky called Fohat. It emerges out of the great darkness of the eternal mother, and it becomes the fiery whirlwind. Here's another one that I've done up that has several key symbols of the first ray. It has a gold ball in the center of rotary cyclic motion, symbolizing what DK calls progressive motion, which, in a sense, on its highest level, isn't motion at all. It's pure stillness. And it causes all the Devic substance to rotate and to form into crystalline structures. And this is where, of course, all your triangles come from, and why it's so important to use triangles, because you're building your way back up to source, to the initial impulse that created the triangles. You have the sword. At the tip of the sword is an electrical discharge. You have the diamonds on either side of a cross, and diamonds are considered a first-ray gem because of their hardness, their purity, and their advanced state in the mineral kingdom. And then you have from Alice Bailey a little mantra, victors through the pure, clear will. I understand that each one of these images or symbols can be studied, and a lot more can be gained from what I'm sharing here, very superficially. But it's better that I give a lot of information and a lot of charts and tabulations, and the student can go back in and at their leisure bring these presentations up and study them according to their ray makeup. Because what is important to one student may only be peripherally interesting to another, and yet another may be revelatory. These are hierarchical symbols. These are not something I created because I'm an artist, but as an artist, I've taken from the wisdom teachings these keynotes, these words of power, these symbols that have been used for tens of thousands of years by the White Brotherhood to invoke the very forces we're discussing. This is perhaps one of my favorite because it shows a tunnel, funnel, vortex of blue. And it looks like it's connected into the stars from the Sirius system. And we know that's second ray, and that's the path to Sirius. Yet it also has a first ray component. And because we're in a second ray solar system, that is the main conduit. But out of the throat of that main second ray love wisdom blue conduit comes this fiery blast. Now, take note that the blast is formless, and yet, if you study the funnel effect as it's emerging, you have all these rings. These are what the Tibetan calls the rings pass not. In other words, when the master views you or your group on the inner planes, they can ascertain your progress and where you're at by assessing the rings pass not. Those are your different vehicles and how far you've purified them, how far out they extend. And so the outer ones have a wider range, but the inner ones are tighter and more potent. And so it's sort of a paradox, but this visual diagram explains the idea of rings pass not, that this entity can only go beyond the rings pass not that it has created, its auric fields. Okay, excellent. Now we're going to bring it down to a little bit more macrocosmic level. If any of you attended the wonderful Moya University SRI yearly conference, our beloved brother Michael Robbins, who without his assistance and guidance and mentoring, I wouldn't even be here now. He in one of his videos that was played at the conference, he talked about the third formula. And with his magnificent voice, eloquently poetic as well as occultly correct, he shared the wording of this formula. And all I'm doing here is presenting the visual part of that formula. And remember that these formulas are not presented to groups simply to make personality soul alignment. They certainly have the potential to do that, but they're to take individuals within groups to the shambolic level. They are what is called life formulas, as the soul is consciousness formulas. So here is where the Tibetan says, and there's several parts to this, the old and outworn presentations were the product of the concrete mind, and are therefore crystallizing in their effects and distorting in their results. The new approach, which I seek to indicate, makes its appeal to the abstract mind and to the soul, whose values are sound, and eventually to the intuition. I appreciate the patience and the discipline all of you have demonstrated coming here, not just month after month or week after week, but year after year, because I do pour a lot of lower monastic concrete information into my presentations. But hopefully, and I will let all of you make the decision or decide on whether I've been successful, but I have tried to use that only as a base and to bring in the influence of the symbols, the tabulations, and then most importantly, the animations. A lot of people who superficially see my work with symbols, they often say, "This is very beautiful artwork. I really love it." And I appreciate that. But it's not just beautiful artwork. It's based on hierarchical symbols and inner esoteric truths that, and this is the key statement here, that in the hands, or perhaps should I say, in the eye of the disciple and the advanced student, it can become revelatory. Remember, every symbol has seven aspects, and each one, when you master it, will take you to the next level. Okay, this is all from Discipleship in the New Age, Volume 2. I highly recommend you read it. Okay. This perhaps should have come before the other one, but it's from the same area. Actually, it's not. I apologize. It's from Rays and Initiations, Volume 5. However, it's on the same subject. Now, DK says here, keeping in mind one of our main themes is always the channel in which energy moves and the vortex, trumpet, or funnel in which it emerges from. The door of initiation. That center is in reality an opening, a door leading somewhere, a way of escape, a place through which the soul, imprisoned in the body, can emerge and pass into higher states of consciousness. It has also been called the funnel or channel for the sound. It has been named the trumpet through which the escaping AUM can pass. As an artist, when I read that, and I read it long before I had the talent to do these symbols, it just blew my mind. In fact, I met with Mary Bailey in the early 70s and at Lucius, and she asked me what my MO was, and I said that at one day I wanted to translate the Tibetans' symbolic language into visuals. And her exact answer was, "Interesting, but don't you think there's more important work that should be done first, like triangles and goodwill and right human relations?" And I couldn't disagree with her from her vantage point. And she was doing exactly that and doing a great job. And I said, when the time is right, I will do it. And then later on, after years and years of training, this is the result of it right here. And images have more intimacy than words. And the only exception I would say is like words of power. And what is the word of power for the first ray? I assert the fact. The second ray, I see the greatest light, and on down through all seven. And we'll be discussing that as we move into more advanced meditations and insights. So this idea of the vortex, which is the funnel or the channel, is very synonymous. And the sound, in this case, he's talking about the soul, the sound of the soul, which he often refers to as the word. And not to be confused with the sound spelled with a capital S, which relates to the monad or Shambhala. Okay. Are there any questions up to this point? And I appreciate your patience. Heidi.
Thank you, Duane. I just wanted to say two things. That when you had the image going for the moving dynamic thing that we were focused on, there were two things. The pulsing actually created the sweeping out of the light, so I could actually see how it was actually increasing. But it was increasing its frequencies as it was spinning, and that spinning actually was relieving what was finished out of its space, I could just say. And the second thing that came to me was it looked very much like the whirling dervishes of the Sufi lineage that spin and hold completely steady in the center, and in their skirt, the skirts that they wear actually looked exactly like that. So I just wanted to bring those images into that presentation that you had. Thank you.
Excellent. I appreciate your comments. The rotating vortex does, in fact, palpitate and pulsate. And we have to keep in mind that the soul on its own plane is not static. It is not a thing. It's a living, vibrant organism that demonstrates divine geometry, color, sound, and several other important aspects. So I think, Heidi, you've really hit onto it, because it's like priming the pump. If you've ever seen those old-fashioned pumps where you actually have to put water in it to create suction, and the suction creates a vacuum. And then the vacuum, because of the thrust, when your hand goes down, it pulls the water up. It's really quite magical. And when you look at this rotating vortex spinning, it's just like begging you to enter into its dance, just like Heidi, you eloquently shared with the whirling dervishes. And if any of you have studied the poetry of Rumi, you'll get a sense of what he can do with words. They dance, they come alive, and they don't just stop when the words stop. No, that's like the launching pad. And DK has said that every culture or religious organization will have, to some degree, some type of seventh ray ceremonial magic in which they will ground these higher, more subjective forces. And yes, anyone, if you've ever done any dances, universal dances for peace that are pretty common out there in the New Age agenda, it's just very powerful. It's not like anything that we're exposed to here in the West. And that's not to say you can't get high dancing just in the Western tradition, but the Sufis twirl because the planets twirl, our bodies twirl, the soul, the monad at its own plane, the group you work with, they're all twirling. And it's not like you're trying to start something so much as you're trying to enter into something that's already twirling. And when a whole group of people, like the whirling dervishes, can do that magic. The whole group goes into a state of ecstasy. And many occultists that I know have criticized them as leaving out the mental part. But the thing is, many Sufis actually don't. There are many very advanced Sufi masters, and they have mastered all the seven rays, but they might put it in a slightly different language. So thank you, Heidi. That was excellent. Any additional comments?
The only thing I would add to what you just said is that the dances of universal peace are actually orchestrated to the astrological movements, actually, of the planets connected to the star systems. And they're very geometrical in the way that they're formed and also in the music that they actually create through the steps and the songs. You just have to be attuned to it to actually recognize what is being transmitted through some of those dances of universal peace. And of course, it actually assists the people that are dancing to enter into what you're talking about, which is that space. And the one thing I would just add is that there's this place of efforting, but then once you enter, there is absolutely no effort. And that's an interesting passage, I would just say.
Well, the group dynamic takes over. It's leading, and that's what is meant occultly of the individual breath being given and submitted to the group breath, and the group energy field takes over. So that's excellent. Thank you, Heidi. Okay, any additional, Asha?
Yeah, I'll hold on just one second, Asha. Okay. Diana says, can these funnels be perforated to access a higher vibration to move from one ring to another with a higher vibration?
I would absolutely say yes, that we're talking about semi-permeable membranes where they dynamically pull down energy from the next level, but all these spheres are permeable, and they can, this is how they give and create offsprings or secondary vortices. Yes, excellent. Thank you, Diana. Go ahead, Asha.
Thank you. First of all, I've been away for a while. It's so good to be back. Everything you said just ignites me so much that I'm kind of buzzing. My question was from the first, like the beginning first video where you had the toroidal field, and you had the energy coming from top to bottom.
Yes.
Now, it also comes from the earth up. It comes the other way too. Like when we do Qigong, we do the movements with the arm one way
Yes.
and then way, so it comes from bottom up too, doesn't it?
Yes, absolutely. And it can just circulate of its own volition, but it can also be morphing into the next higher level. And once this energy circulates down through the ovoid or the sphere through this dual vortex, when it makes its exit, it goes down to the next lower level, and then from there to the next lower level. Yes. Good. I'm glad you're
And
buzzing.
I read somewhere, don't quote me exactly, but something to the effect that when if you sound the om like three times, it actually rearranges the strings in the quantum field. And I was like, whoa, that's phenomenal. And and after just seeing some of the details of how this works, it's like, yeah, it does, it does. It was just very reaffirming of that.
Well, thank you. It's actually very scientific. I'm presenting it as well as I possibly can through a lot of the fourth ray because it invokes the intuition and trying to bring in scientific parallels. So that's good. Thank you. Any
Thank you.
additional
So good to be
comments?
back to the group with the group.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Okay, we shall proceed.
Now we have another hand.
Okay,
Go ahead,
yes.
Barbara.
Yes, I wonder how much of an intentional intelligence is coming at the source of this, and how the colors and the shapes interact with that intelligence.
Well, I would say, and I apologize if this sounds a bit pretentious, because it has really very little to do with me as an artist. My value, having been trained as an artist, is to step aside and let these more causal forces play through me and instruct me and direct me into creating these images. And I don't want to get too woo-woo on anybody, but this is definitely being impressed from a higher level than I'm operating on, I can guarantee you, which is good. And it's right and it's healthy. Too often, artists become overly identified with their artwork, whereas it's only an extension of something within, of some higher intelligence that is attempting to be stepped down and to communicate with a larger group of people. Thank you. Okay, let's move on. Okay, now we're going to sort of show. With some animations coming up, how this whole thing fits together. And we're all familiar with fractals and how that if you look at this image, you see at the very center is this black dot and this red swirl spiraling out. And then the red swirl becomes blue. Then it becomes green, then yellow, then orange, pink, and then violet. Well, those are the seven rays. And as it spirals out from that point of pure abstraction, which Blavatsky called Fohat and the Laya point, pure abstraction, it carries with it all of the seven rays indelibly imprinted into its body. This is the law of correspondence that DK talks about, and the law of analogy seen through color, sound, and geometry and vibration. Each circular arm is in direct contact with the next curved and circular appendage. So each vortex has its own unique autonomy, but it is a part of a much greater whole. Think of that beauty and the immensity of that concept. It's one life, but when you narrow down to some part of it, it has all these different expressions, seven rays, seven planes, all the different sheaths, all the different astrological signs. And that little black dot of Fohat or pure abstraction has to be duplicated on all these lesser levels to some smaller degree. There always has to be the will or the love vibration or and the active intelligent vibration, even if it's only embryonic, in everything, right down to the smallest cell. To that piece of dust that's floating in front of your window with the sun shining on it. So let's take this and analyze it a little bit with the fifth ray and then go into a magnificent animation that I wish I could say that I did, but somebody else did it. And I'm going to give you the link so you can see other work that she does. Okay, this is one arm. And this is a repeat of what I just said. The fractal nature of the seven rays. What we're doing here is we're sort of like unwrapping it, which is not fair to the organism because the organism, even if it's permeable like a jellyfish, it's still one organism. It's an infinity and of multiples of seven. And there you see once again, the black symbolizes the first ray, ray two blue, three green, four, and on through the seven rays. And if any of you are on your cell phones, this is what it looks like when you explode it and you bring it down right onto the fifth ray. These are all separate cells within the body of God, but they're all connected. They're all connected. Okay, let's look at this image. This is the same identical image. It's like you see a main fractal drilling through space, and this parent, if I may use that word perhaps inaccurately, has all these offsprings that are self-organizing because they're always connected to the main body. When we think about meditation and growth on the path, unfortunately, we create these thought forms that we're disconnected from deity, we're disconnected from the soul. And in time and space, we may say that is an observation that's correct and true. But to see the bigger picture, we are never separated from the soul. The soul has these threads, it has these vortices, it has these spheres that surround us at all times. And it's like Rumi and Carl Jung said, it's more about moving the clouds away than it is creating a bridge. And I realize how contradictory that may sound from previous statements. And perhaps it's both. We invoke up invocation, and we get the attention of some higher energy, and through evocation, it returns the call. And that's what the om is. It's the crying out, it's the call. I'm here. Not just as a personality, but as a personality wanting redemption, wanting transmutation, ready for initiation. Okay, this is another one of my favorite quotes by the Tibetan. Energy is a life fluid circulating throughout the entire body of the Logos and vivifying, therefore, even the tiniest atom in that whole. It is valuable to endeavor to grasp the picture and to vision the wonder of what is transpiring. And DK has said in other passages similar to this, we cannot do any more at this time historically than trying to communicate that which is not possible to communicate. And were Alice Bailey an artist, we may have had images like this, because they show this is a beautiful depiction of a cross. You have a center point of white light, which is the first thing that comes out of the dark void of pure being, and the white light flashes forth as the seven rays. And but it's all mobile, it's moving, it's organic, it's a dance. This is why the Sufis used to say it's not just studying scholarly all these teachings, it's stepping on the dance floor, stepping into the vortice that's there, waiting to take us to the next higher level of initiation, if we dare. And that's what entering into initiation is. You have to be daring, because you get a little giddy in the first aspects of initiation. And it can be at times, and this is a terrible analogy, but I can't find another one. You're walking along the street, you're singing a song, maybe you're sounding your om. You do not notice that you're stepping off the curb. And all of a sudden, there's this, what I call, for lack of words, psychic vertigo, where there's no gravity, you're floating in space. And then all of a sudden you connect with the street and then you're back. Oh, wow. Yo, I could have tripped. Could have been run over by a runaway garbage truck. That is not always what people experience, but it's not uncommon to get this sense of being emptied prior to being filled. And people rightfully can be intimidated with that because it's not always something they're familiar with. Okay, now we're getting to the best part. And this next video is in continuous motion, and we're going to use it, as I mentioned, as a meditation. Synchronize your breathing, synchronize your heartbeat, and see yourself as not just one fractal, but multiple fractals, all rotating, dancing, and swirling in the infinitude of space. This moment was made for you and the group.
Om mani padme hum.
Okay, I apologize for not having the link that I can drop in the chat, but if anyone is interested, this Brenda Mollo has done some amazing fractal work. What I find fascinating about that video is that there are literally hundreds, if not thousands, of interpretations, and there's not any one that's right. It's all relative to where each person is at in their story, in their evolutionary growth, in what their needs are. When I see this, I see how the Buddhists often use the conch shell as a symbol of some of their advanced teachings. The conch shell, when it's put into two pieces, has all these chambers, and they go from large into smaller and smaller size until you get to the center. You can see how the ageless wisdom teachings, white magic, alchemy, they often use the serpent or the dragon as a symbol of their work. And I see this sinuous twisting and turning in space or outside of space, depending on how you look at it, or a bird in flight, or a delicate flower. It's gossamer. It's like Michael Robbins, who named his books quite accurately, Tapestry of the Gods. This is the whoop and warp of God's tapestry. And when we find our correct threads, we irresistibly wind our way back to the source. Okay, so we're going to stop here for a minute. And if anybody would have anything to share, either about the video or where we now are.
We have a lot of comments that say exquisite. Again, please. Well, of course, we'll put these videos so you can look at them as often as you want. Divas in action. Gorgeous. So anyway, okay, you got a hand. Heidi, go ahead, please.
I just want to share what I wrote down while it was moving is just energy is moving in two directions simultaneously, creating and dissolving moment to moment with beauty, unity, and grace, creating the field of unity which all of life is participating in.
Beautiful. Life is a poem. And if we're not being seduced or enthralled by it, it's because we haven't learned its language. And the language of purification, transmutation, transfiguration all lies with the Deva evolution. And its complement on the 1, 3, 5, 7 line of Shambhala, the mental planes, and the material world in which we live. We wouldn't be here if it wasn't our time. You wouldn't be participating in these presentations and the other groups, the other disciples that you hold near and dear in your life. Excellent, Heidi, thank you. Anyone else like to comment?
Okay, Dana posted the website for Brenda Malloy, so
Oh,
thank you
thank
for
you,
that.
Dana. Thank you.
Francis says the video is hypnotic on the higher planes.
Yes, I love that. And I've often thought, as a race of people, most everybody on the planet has become hypnotized by these very materialistic forces. And it's not that anything that's material is bad. It's just when it's over accentuated at the expense of spiritual inclinations or pursuits that it becomes undesirable. And if somebody were to ask me what I was hoping to achieve in this type of work that I've been doing for quite some time, I would say, in some small way, try to awaken people who have fallen under hypnotic spell of materialism. And again, it's not about things, it's about where your attention is, because things become the tools that you express these higher principles. And the material part of our bodies, the sheaths, they become upgraded every time we undergo initiation from these causal levels. And so they're not the, you're not the same person when you've experienced unconditional love, when you've experienced the flaming sword of the first ray, or had a, an incredibly large mental download from the higher mental planes. You can't be the same person. Just one thought. I'm reminded of Emerson, who said in one of his magnificent works, one creative thought can change the direction of your whole entire life. Now imagine the potency of that. And it's probably, I assume, the result of the cheetahs, the mind stuff that keeps us jumping from this to that or whatever, is temporarily put into abeyance. It's stilled. And that's what sounding the om does, is it stills the lower mind so that the higher can come down. Excellent. Thank you, Francis. Any additional comments?
Rose posted the link directly to that particular video that we just watched. So,
Okay, that's
and
perfect.
that's all I see in the way of comments or hands at this time.
Okay, excellent. Well, let's move along. And see what we have here. Okay. One of our main themes, as everyone can obviously see, has been the 2025 download, downpouring of this shambolic will energy. And Aries and Taurus, all of the astrological signs bring in some of that, but the horned astrological signs are particularly potent, like Capricorn. And that's not to say the first ray isn't involved again with all these other astrological signs, but Taurus and Aries have a special place of connecting with the will of the Father, the seven stars and the Great Bear, and other austere constellations that we know practically nothing about until we've passed through the third initiation. Anyway, this section is taken from the Tibetan and one of his meditations. And I'm going to, would anybody like to read this?
I can read it.
Thank you, BL.
The joy of death. Create your own cross. I am particularly drawn to this passage by DK on death in one of his meditations on the cross symbology. It's meditation 7, across spiritual position. To offset this unrecognized habit of thought, this meditation is intended to teach the disciple to create, with deliberate intention, his own cross, and in this manner, do away with his idea, again unrealized, that the cross is the result of his point in evolution, that it is imposed upon him by astrological conditions, and that through it, the lords of karma work, exacting from him the full price for all past misdeeds. This, in reality, is not so.
Thank you, BL. That's excellent. Even people often think that all these negative or hindering elements of their personality are creating barriers to future revelations and advancement on the path. And this is true to some degree, but has the student ever thought that maybe without these mayic energies, these glamours, these illusions that we all have, if we didn't have them, we might not be here, that we're all evolving, and this is just where we happen to be. Yeah, we've done things that are not too cool, and there are issues that are not resolved, but that makes up who we are. And it's not a bad thing. It's simply where we start in this incarnation to move forward. Beating oneself up for having this limitation or that problem does not create a good atmosphere. It actually solidifies the problems that we have, the things that we want to overcome. So going back to the quote by the Tibetan, this idea of creating our own cross. Well, we created our own cross by facing our limitations that got us to where we are, and now we're going to go forward to the next higher level. That the cross is self-generated. Think of all the historical propaganda we've been given. And I don't mean to be disrespectful here, because there are very esoteric aspects of, like, the fourth initiation of crucifixion, the third initiation where the causal body is blown out. We can willingly undergo the death of our lesser selves as we learn to, and I quote, take over deeper and more subjective forces. Take over is a key phrase that the Tibetan gives us to understand what he calls this inner life more abundantly. Are things really being taken away from us if we move forward on the spiritual path, which the common interpretation of sacrifice implies, or are we simply letting go of past energies or material forms that are simply no longer useful or needed? We have to be getting some kind of a charge from our glamours and illusions, or we wouldn't allow them to persist, or they wouldn't be here with us, as I tried to explain, no doubt inadequately, just a little earlier in this conversation. However, when we move forward on the spiritual path, the things that we want to overcome, they don't die because we beat them up or hide them under the rug or our pillow. They die by what DK calls attrition, by the slow wearing away of the newly discovered light of the soul or the higher mind shining down through us and saying, you know, these things are just, I don't need them anymore. It's not, oh, I finally killed out my desire body. I finally destroyed these lower thought forms and my negative emotions. No, they died of attrition because you are no longer focused on them and you don't need them anymore. So, are things really being, excuse me, are things really being taken away from us as we move forward on the spiritual path, which the common interpretation of sacrifice implies, or are we simply letting go of those material forms that are simply no longer needed? Because this cross is self-generated, we can all, one and all, willingly undergo the death of our lesser selves as we learn to take over those deeper and more subjective forces. Take over to understand that inner life more abundantly. So, what we're attempting to do here is to give a different perspective of the personality's place, the understanding of its limitations, but recognizing it's the power, it's the purity, it's the dynamicness of the soul light and power that is going to do the majority of the work. If you think, I got to do all this work all by yourself, you are going to get very frustrated and it's going to be very painful. Right now, historically, the world is being cleavened, and it's the sword of Shambhala. And the mantra behind that, before people get it, before the evil is sealed behind the door, there's going to be a lot of upheavals and crises. I come not to bring peace, but to bring a sword. So don't be discouraged and dismayed because there's a lot of chaos going on in the world. This is the test. Can you move forward in spite of it? Can you move forward into the light, which is your true identity, and let the group, the groups, the planetary life, let these higher beings take care of the rest. Just do your small part because within the group it becomes a great contribution.
Duane,
Yes.
you have a comment from Asha. She says, any comments or wisdom about non-human evil, please? You just blessed matrix humanity as we evolve.
Well, there's a place in the teachings that's very deep. I don't know if it's rays and initiations or cosmic fire, where DK infers there is no evil as we understand the term. That a ver at a very high initiation, it's at the third initiation and even possibly after that, we learn that there is two forces that are constantly acting on us at all times. There's involution, which is the third aspect of deity, which creates all these forms that we're working with, our bodies, the planetary life with all its flora and fauna, and the forces of evolution are the second stream that oppose it. Appear to oppose it. They come down and they redeem it. All the material forms are there for a purpose. And all the crap and all the pain and suffering that you see is perhaps not the result of evil as we understand the term in the world, but the limitations of matter at this stage of development. And when the forces of evolution are strong enough, evil will disintegrate because matter will become perfected. And then the whole thing will start all over again in a new system. Now, this is very, very difficult to put into words. All the bad people that you meet, all the manipulation, yeah, you can say that person is evil, but they have a soul, they have a purpose, and you gain your strength not just by what you want to get into, but by what you're trying to get away from. Because we're really trying to get away from those undesirable forces within us that we see exaggerated in other people. When we awaken to soul light, we see we're spiritualizing matter, and this stage we have to go through. And even if the planet is totally destroyed on a material level, it exists on other levels, and it will go on. It will remanifest because the purpose and the plan behind this is way stronger than all these myopic personalities who dominate the political, economic, and military scene. And a lot of this has always existed prior to our perceptions of it. It's just historically, it's now coming to the surface. This pedophilia, this manipulation of money, and all these terrible things. This isn't something new. This is something that's been around for a long time and has been cleverly disguised and covered. And it has a long way to go, but it's being revealed. And that's what you see when you turn your TVs on. And I suggest to compare Fox News or CNN with alternative news to see the contrast, because in time you realize a lot of the hypnosis that we are under is the result of mass media. They just blanket us everywhere you go, billboards, computer screens, the movies. It's all often there to sell you something, to make money, to maintain control over your life. And I know this sounds a little bit like doom and gloom, but it's not. It's just a stage we have to go through. We have to recognize, and AI is a perfect example. It's not AI that's bad. It's not anything that's material that's bad. It's how it's used. Every new innovation, every new invention, and I know this because I have three US patents and I could talk on this for hours. They always are to make money and to gain market share, whereas over time it becomes mainstream, and then the new group of world servers jump on it and they turn it into the good. And that's what you're seeing right here. All these images, all of our communications back and forth, are all a part of that. It's what we choose to do, it's our intention. So the dark forces. They're paper tigers, but a paper tiger can hold you in dramatic fear your whole lifetime if you don't know it's a paper tiger. It's like the Wizard of Oz when the young lady with her little dog Toto, what was her name? She follows back the yellow
Dorothy.
brick, Dorothy.
Dorothy.
She
Dorothy.
follows the yellow brick road back to where all to the source here, and who's creating all this charade, all this craziness? She pulls back the curtain. It's just this old go dude with all his handles. He's pulling back and forth. One day, every person in this group will experience that same revelation, if they haven't already, on greater and more expanded levels. We are being manipulated by somebody in the background pushing levers, and we're the puppets. and we're coming out of our hypnosis. And that's why we're here. This is why you are the beautiful person you are. The people you know, the other groups you involve with, they're all learning that this great psychosis can be healed with love, clarity of mind, and very importantly, at this time of the year, with the potency of the divine will. Any additional comments? Sorry to go off on a diatribe,
Yeah, we
Heidi.
do, but Asha's got her hand up, so go ahead, Asha.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Everything you said resonates, and I hesitate to put this in this conversation, and I don't want to take time away from your presentation.
No,
Everything you
go
said
right ahead.
resonate, but I'm going to try and express this the best I can. My understanding is there is, and I was raised as a Hindu. I'm Indian, born in England. I did not think evil existed. I was raised that evil was did not exist. I was in La La Land, and then I went to Catholic school in England, and it was like sin. And long story short, I now have come to an understanding there is such a thing as cosmic evil. That's why planet Earth is not sacred, and that when Mahaprakriti, when creation was created, there was like a glitch, and somewhere, these are new words to me, and I'm going to try my best to express this. So give me be patient with my inability to articulate. Things like Satan and Lucifer were not in my vocabulary. I was raised not to have that. But now my understanding is, and I'm not talking about the involutionary and evolutionary up and down ascension and the thing and what we're going through. I'm talking about the world of illusion came because there was the planet Earth is not sacred because there was cosmic AI, to use a better word, put around the planet. We have these, the Demiurge and the Anunnakis and all that is the history of that. And in India, we call it the Asuras. And there exists evil. And this has been a strange new understanding for me to assimilate and integrate into my thoughts. And my way of dealing with it is to just really focus on my self-realization, because I think that's the best contribution I can make. My mind cannot compute some of it, but as we talk about it, and what we're going through now is actually a wonderful time. All this stuff surfacing, I think, is just a very, very deep purification as the earth does become sacred, and we are, but not all humanity has the divine spark. Not all humanity is a child of God. That this is hard for me to say. And I hope I'm not, I don't know how to express it, but there are plenty of human beings walking around that do not have consciousness. I don't, to the, that they would not be working with what we're working with now. They are manifestations of some levels of cosmic evil, which is also a creation of God. Mahaprakriti, it was like a note that went off a note in the scale went off. It just went off. And so it's still a part of it because it was created by Creator. Everything that was created by Creator in my childhood was divine, perfect, no evil. But there was some glitch. And now it's like being absorbed back. So I don't know if I'm making any cognitive sense or intellectual sense, but this is when I asked, I was hope I want I want to I'm understanding that it has been absorbed and it is there, but and Michael insisted. I remember having a conversation with him and I said, oh no, the door to evil has been sealed. Da, 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 da. Said, Asha, no, it hasn't. It's there. I said, don't you be sending love to the evil thing. And I said, So he was very aware of the existence of it. And I was like, oh, the door to evil has been sealed. And this was like 20 years ago I talked to him, maybe 10. And so It does exist. He knew it at the time. And I remember thinking in the conversation, this is not computing, but he knew evil existed in a way that I'm now beginning to understand. And it's not, whatever you talked about at that level, that's different. I'm talking at a cosmic level, and I'm
Yes.
talking at a level there is seeded, there's humanity. I'm thinking we call them in the Avatar games NPCs, non-player NPC, whatever they're called. But there are people walking around that look like us, all humans, that do not have the child of God soul, spark of God.
This is brought out in the teachings, and I appreciate you mentioning it and outlining it.
It's brought out in where is it mentioned? I mean,
In the teachings, throughout the teachings, this idea of people that become severed from their souls. And the Tibetan and Blavatsky say there aren't a lot of people that are in that state, but there are some. And I'd like to pick up and carry this conversation a little further. As human beings, we often have to give everything a name. Often we oversimplify, often we stereotype. And cosmic evil exists. However, you could say equally that involution is evil. Involution is the material side, and it what is what causes limitation in the early stages of development. And if you get into the Tibetan's works deeply, he'll talk about evil coming from previous solar systems or star systems that are in a state of decay, and that unhealthy vibration is coming down into our system, just like the moon on a lesser level is a dead planet. Then you have Atlantis and Lemuria and all of the unredeemed substance. That this is what evil is. Evil is unredeemed substance awaiting its day of opportunity. And some people fight against it, and some people have severed their link with their soul, however tenuous and thin. But as you undergo each initiation, your concept of opposition or what the problem is will shift. And just to close this section, and to continue on, I would say that we have to realize that cosmic evil and a lot of this negativity is taken care of by spiritual lives far more advanced than we are. And we just play our small part, and with a group, we have great potency, and with groups. Okay, excellent.
I would like to add to your comments a little bit, Duane,
Okay,
on
go
this
ahead,
subject
Rose.
very briefly. Well, first off, Alice Bailey does talk about somewhere the eighth sphere,
Yes.
where what you would call a lost soul would end up, but it's very difficult to have that occur, but it can happen. And then, of course, the left-hand path and all of that. But even there's usually a coming back to at some point before you go into that eighth sphere. But that, anyway, very for my also in my understanding, this cosmic evil is humanity. There's human evil, which opens the door to the to be influenced by cosmic evil, and the ceiling of the door where evil dwells is the ceiling of the human evil, so that we can no longer be influenced by these greater cosmic forces. And that's part of the web, the grid around the planet in an etheric sense, from going from the square to the triangle. Also, in the Bailey book somewhere, it speaks that the cosmic evil is dealt with, as Duane mentioned, by these greater, higher beings that even like our human hierarchy can't even go there because it's so far vast and so far beyond their domain, their realm. And it's, from my understanding, it's forces that are not on the evolutionary path is what we would term evil. But for them, if you want to call it a them, it's not evil. It's a part of their life expression because it's their path, but it's not the evolutionary path. So therefore, to us, it is evil and maleficent. So it's very interesting, but that's all I wanted to say. Thank you.
Thank
Thank
you.
you both. Thank you.
Okay, we have a whole bunch of comments and we still have another hand, but I would like to read. I'm skipping over a little of these and I'll try and go back in a minute. But
Okay.
Walter posted a quote here from Esoteric Psychology that says, "What do we mean by the phrase forces of evil? Not the armies of unrighteousness and sinfulness organized under that figment of the imagination, the devil or some supreme antichrist. For such an army does not exist, and there is no great enemy of God arraigned in battle against the Most High. There is only suffering, erring humanity, still half awakened, dimly sensing the vision and struggling to free itself from the thraldom of the past with its tarnished allegiances and its unchecked loyalties. The forces of evil are, in the last analysis, only the entrenched ancient ideals and habits of thought which have served their purpose in bringing the race to its present point of development, but which must now disappear if the new age is to be ushered in as desired." And then, hold on just a minute, Michael, before I get to you. Francis asks, "If the Christ brings a sword, what does the Antichrist wield?"
A sword, but they're two different swords. One is pointing down, bringing the power of matter, which is the unredeemed substance, and Walter's description was off the charts with accuracy. Thank you so much. And the other, the sword of Shambhala, captures the will of deity and it drives the lesser darkness into sealing it in the early stages and then eventually transmutating it. See, when you seal it, that doesn't mean it's destroyed. It just means you're getting it out of the way temporarily. One other little fine point that's sort of technical, but it's worth bringing out here. We all know the egoic lotus. It has tiers or petals, and it has first the knowledge petals, outer tier. Then the next higher level is the love petals, and then you have the will petals. Now, most people, most second-rate people, develop those petals fairly sequentially. And each one of those petals has an attribute or something to work on, but they usually go from the knowledge petals to the love petals to the will petals. There are people in incarnation right now who have developed the knowledge petals to a very, very high level. But they have bypassed the love petals and gone directly to the will petals or the diamond and the lightning bolt at the very center. So these people, who a lot of them at this time historically run the country and run a lot of huge enterprises where they're only looking out for more power and more wealth and more control, they, in time, will realize the sin the limitation of their development, and they will build in that love vibration. So keep that in mind. And because people often ask me, well, how can people do such bad things? Don't they have an egoic lotus? Well, they do. Most people have an egoic lotus. And but the petals, and this is not all that common, but I'll tell you could get 20 people ruling the world that have this issue, because that's how smart, how savvy they are in manipulating Mayic forces, and they're drawing down power from Shambhala. Now, it's not the highest power from Shambhala, and I know this sounds a little contradictory, but it's powerful enough to set them as kings in the world and queens that you're seeing taking place right now as you overlook the dynamic of where we are. Okay, one more.
All right. Okay,
And thank.
we actually have lots more comments, but Michael's had his hand up patiently for a while. Go ahead, Michael.
Yeah, hello. So the first lighter one that I wanted to put out there is the esoteric meaning of the Wizard of Oz. That was William Baum who wrote that. Yellow Brick Road was the gold standard. It was an economic allegory. The Tin Man was the industrialist. The Scarecrow was the farm agricultural, and the Lion was the political will, courage to fight against the usurpation, and of course the Federal Reserve was the green Wizard of Oz. On this topic, of evil, I think that as far as from my perspective, is like there is cosmic evil and then there's the planetary evil, the unredeemed substance that you're talking about. If we go back to like the initial formation of the planet, you have the basic elements really violently slamming into each other. And there's still a residual of that within our planet, that violence. It no longer serves us, but it's what you call like primeval element. And it's out of balance and it hasn't been fully redeemed, in that
Yes.
sense. But the talking about cosmic evil, I think we would not be good to even like put our eyes on something like that for even a fraction of a second, because that's something that's like really like we're not going to get there for a long time to really understand that. But then there's this like this duality that's playing out again, the way that I've what I way that I feel it, that we're dealing with the evil people that we have. I'm always trying to bring it back to the idea that this is our responsibility. What's going on right now is what we have not done or have not achieved, and maybe we don't make it and then we have to do it again. But the evil is the externalization of the things we haven't addressed. Like if you go back in school, how many people ever stood up to a bully? How many ever people ever stood up to people who were authoritarian, actually took the responsibility to stand up for the geek when the jock got on his back, or stood up for somebody in a group that was getting oppressed, stood up for women, stood up for races, stood up, like within our life, when we continually like kind of do not address that, then what we have is now this amplified externalization, what we would consider evil, because it hasn't been addressed. So since it was not brought back into ourselves in the internal state where we would address our problems on our own level, address our family problems, address our interpersonal problems, address our own spiritual problems, then it had to take on a life of its own. in order for us to see it, you know, it was always knocking on the door telling us like, hey, you guys have to address this. You have to address this. You have to address this and keep ignoring it, which I find is what we did, culturally. You know, the whole idea that we're not supposed to talk about problems or talk about negativity, that creates that negativity having to be externalized. Because if it's not internalized and not addressed, then of course it has to come up because we have to resolve it because humanity has that mission to resolve this dualistic aspect so that we can transmit that solution out into the universe for the other planets that are going through this, you know, will go through this issue, or maybe, you know, at some future date when we're more evolved, we'll be sitting over another planet and we'll have, you know, that solution for that dualistic state, you know, and we transmit it back into the cosmic fabric and say, this is how we resolve this, this thing where we are always trying to avoid the darkness. Because I, and when Asha said, you know, there are some people that are not connected, I think when we're talking about the one soul, I think the one soul is always evolving, and you can withdraw, or you can, like what's happening today when people get so much violence in their eyes and so much, you know, the soul will withdraw, but it's always evolving and it's always there for us to connect to in the future whenever we reach that state. It's not like people, I don't think people, there are people who don't have a spark. They just are withdrawn, or the soul is withdrawn, because it's like when the Devic entities withdraw in nature because of the loud noises, because of the explosions, because of fires, you know, it's that kind of thing. It's always there. It's always evolving. And the soul's always evolving, the one soul. And so we're just like connecting to it.
Excellent, excellent insights. As usual, Mike, I think you need a podcast, and you can beam out so much wisdom that so many people need. Thank you for your contribution. Okay, let's move along a little bit here. And okay. If we destroy our little selves by an excess or abundance of joy, love, and spiritual understanding, where is the sacrifice here? And I might say, where is the evil? Evil may still be in the world, but it's not motivating you. It's not tainting your work and your salvation, if I may use a Christian term. The death of all forms, be they physical, emotional, or psychological, gives us a hint of how the first ray and the higher Devic forces who work along these lines can be summoned up on our behalf to do this important work. Little emphasis has been given in modern religious discipline on the joy of death, as opposed to petitioning some spiritual power to intervene on our behalf and lengthening a physical plane incarnation that has long since outlived its usefulness. To go back to my earlier statements, the light will only enter you when you have come to the conclusion that parts of yourself have now outlived their usefulness. Maybe they're not evil. They're not bad. It's who we are. It's how we got here. Maybe thousands of incarnations just to get here. Okay, so we got a few issues we got to deal with. Let the soul come in. It will take care of it. Okay. There's a great mystery behind the discomfort of discarding and transcending the lesser selves, and an even greater one awaiting all those who learn the technique of dying daily to their spiritual greatness within. Never underestimate the joy of death when the love and will of the Christ are being reborn into our lives on a daily basis. Now, it's passages like this that I've rendered a number of different images of somebody going through, let's say, the third or fourth initiation. And yes, you can't, those are such lofty levels, it's very, very hard to capture them, even partially. But I wanted to create an alternative to a lot of mainstream stereotypes. So looking at this here, you have the sacred violet flame, seventh ray. You have a person with their hands outstretched, sort of cratering or holding a seven-pointed star, which is a symbol of the monadic life. And all around this person are these material forces on different levels, but they are the master weaver, the master magician that is weaving them into all kinds of different things that will bring redemption and resurrection and transfiguration and transformation to all these material forces around us. It's not like just because you become spiritual, you kick out of your life all the material forces within and around you. No, you use them. That's your conveyor belt to help other people. That's your ladder, Jacob's ladder, that you come down from your high estate, hanging on to the Antikrana, which is like the ladder, but still taking steps down the different subplanes. Another one. This is what I call the Rosy Crucifixion, which is sort of a symbol of the fourth initiation. Yes, we all undergo discomfort in the early stages of initiation, but the joy, the ecstasy, the bliss is so much greater that it overrides the discomfort and it puts the material forces in their proper place. It does not destroy them. This is what the mystic got wrong. You don't destroy the material forms, you overshadow them with such beauty and such truth that they now become servants to the one life, to the soul, rather than the other way around. The two at the cross here, this is like this is like going from the fixed to the cardinal cross, third initiation and after, where you draw down fire from heaven, and it's that buddhic energy that pours down, lifting the astral body up into its field of activity and drawing down all the prototypes and plans that God has developed for the next major cycle. And it's all electrical, it's all different levels of plasma and electricity from the most mundane that the scientists deal with now to the most austere heights of what Blavatsky and Bailey and many others are talking about when they say cosmic electricity. So, crucifixion is not a snuffing out of the lower man. It's the embodiment of the cosmic man or woman into that little frame. That little fragile frame. And that's why some people go out of incarnation when they pass the third or the fourth, because the beauty is just so overwhelming. But that type of death, the occult death, is just absolutely nothing to compare with checking out of incarnation when you have no idea why you came and why you're there. And to quote Henry David Thoreau, the worst thing in life is to come to the end of it and realize you never sang your song. And that's why we're here. We're here to dance, to sing our song, and to sing it independently of others, and yet simultaneously, like the fractals, at the same time with others, because we're all part of this immense bridge. Okay, another one that I've done, 12-petaled heart center within the, when you've gone from the mutable to the fixed cross, you have the cube of matter at the bottom that is surrounded by all these sheaths of high active intelligence and Buddhic forces. And at the very center is energy pouring down from the Atmic plane, the will of the Father. That should have a black dot right in the center, which it doesn't. And then, before we close with our last meditation, whoops. Okay, I'm going to skip a few here. As usual, everyone's probably used to that. We often close with this same quote because it's so powerful. And even though the Tibetan says there's no way of depicting these different triangles as they're moving, this is the best that he can do. But now with computer graphics, we can duplicate to a higher and more refined way. You can never duplicate the actual energy itself, but let's somebody like to lead that.
I can read.
Thank you.
These triangles must be regarded as in rapid movement. I wonder if you can grasp at least partially and symbolically the fact that these triangles must not be thought of as placed static and eternally the same, or even as three-dimensional. They must be regarded as in rapid movement, revolving eternally in space and ceaselessly moving onward, and as of the fourth and fifth dimensional extensions. There is no way of depicting them or of bringing them visually to your attention, for only the inner eye of vision can imagine their progression, position, or appearance. Therefore, the entire cosmic web and solar system is an intricate, constantly moving, interwoven series of triangles, wherein each point of a triangle emanates three lines or streams of energy. Nine in all. It is likewise responsive to and receptive of the energies, likewise triple in nature, which lie within its periphery and or sphere of influence and vibratory activity.
Excellent. Thank you, Heidi. So let us close this session with one more video. And to me, it really invokes the intuition to get a sense of when one is completely in a state of rapture, the crucifixion where every cell in your body is vibrating at a level of joy and ecstasy that is, of course, impossible to put into words. So take a deep breath and just move right into this little animation.
Yo yo na
Excellent. I appreciate your attention and your sharing, and I look forward to our next meeting. Love and light.
Thank you, Duane. Lots of
Thank you,
kudos
Pia.
as usual.
Thank you so much.
And Michael has just posted something there on darkness and the darker path. And of course, we'll put all of the comments there. We'll post them with the recording so everybody can look that up later as they keep coming in. All right.
Excellent.
And as we missed a couple of them because we got on that very nice chat. So, well, thank
excellent.
You, everybody. Thank you, Duane. And see you all next time.
Love you.
Love you all.